I'm Laurie. I'm a compulsive overeater, and it's a privilege to speak to you. I have a feeling it might be colder in, actually in Winnipeg than it is right now in Juneau. It's minus, well, we're Celsius, but it's minus 4. And we have lots of snow. I don't know what it's like there, but at any rate, I've been a member of OA since February the 11th of 1986. I've been abstinent since approximately May the 1st of 1993, so in a couple of weeks it'll be 29 years of abstinence. Part of my story is the 7 years between the time I joined and the time that I got my abstinence. But when I say I'm abstinent, what I really want to talk about is the miracle that I've had for almost 29 years, which is that once I have decided what I abstain from, and once I work the steps of Overeaters Anonymous and continue to work steps 10, 11, and 12, I have not wanted to return to the things I abstain from, whether they're eating behaviors or foods. They can be around me and I don't want them. I can see other people enjoying them and saying, oh, this is the greatest whatever ice cream I've ever had, and be happy for them. And if they leave some on the plate because they're full, I don't get angry at them and I don't want to eat it. And for me, that's a miracle. And there aren't, most normal people in this world would not consider that to be a miracle at all. It's if you're full, you stop eating. If you like the taste, you enjoy it, and then when you get too full of it, you stop. I have that relationship, and always have had that relationship with alcohol. I've never liked any liquor, but I have liked really good tasting wines and some really good tasting beers. But I have a terrible reaction to alcohol. I don't enjoy it. I don't like alcohol at all. So occasionally I've had one beer, maybe one and a half beers, enjoying the taste, but not liking what it does to me, and then stopping. Just not saying, boy, this tasted good, but I don't want any more. And I think normal people have that with food. My wife certainly does. And I went through years of trying to understand how someone couldn't understand food the way I understood food. I joined OA because it was, I had an AA friend who had been a gutter member of AA and introduced me to a bunch of other gutter people, ex-gutter people that had literally lifted out of the gutter of the main street in my town and brought to AA meetings and changed, transformed into the most amazing people I'd ever met. And they had stories to tell, the jail stories, the bankruptcies, the violence they experienced in their lives, the violence they inflicted on others, and then the calmness, the incredible serenity, the wisdom in their eyes. And I wanted what they had, but I was not an alcoholic. There's no way that I had any of their symptoms. But I had gone through three sessions of a popular weigh and pay plan, and lost weight and then gained it back and lost it and then gained it back. I was getting heavier and heavier. I actually went to counseling. My counselor didn't want to talk about food as much as the work I was doing, and it turned out I was working. I was a workaholic. It was interfering with my family life. Our kids were young, and I left the. I was a lawyer. I left the law firm I was working with. Set up my own little boutique law firm with very low overhead. Everything was going to be wonderful. There was a sauna and a shower in the building, and I was going to run to work just a mile and a half away, and I was going to shower and maybe even sauna, and then run back, and that would solve my eating problem. Well, I never did shower or sauna in that place, and my weight began to get heavier, worse and worse. I began to split my pants, and I had never been. I was not morbidly obese. I was just really, really fat. I'm not like some of my heroes in this fellowship, because I was visited by my AA friend who had left town and had come back to visit. He probably had been talking to my wife, but when I told him that my wife was pushing me to go back to that weigh and pay plan, he said, "Well, why don't you try OA?" And I said, "Well, what's that?" He said, "That's Overeaters Anonymous." I said, "What's that?" He said, "It's like Alcoholics Anonymous, except for food." And with all the humor I could muster and the reality behind the humor, I said, never in my life have I had a business meeting set on a Thursday, had a donut on a Wednesday, and woke up in a hotel room on Friday, not knowing where I had been. Those were the stories that he told, you know, he and his friends told. And it's true. I mean, I had a functional job. I was functioning well in it. I had never had episodes which caused me to make overeating, which caused me to make decisions which affected my entire life. I mean, it affected my long-term life. That I knew, but not short-term, not immediate. It wasn't like a drug that I would take. I'd suddenly run out into traffic or gambling where I would, you know, gamble away life savings and things like that. It's a very slow and very undramatic illness for most of us until we reach a point of no return, of too little or too much, and then it becomes very dramatic. But for most of us, it's not dramatic. And my friend looked at me and he said, if you don't take your food as seriously as I take my alcohol, you're going to die. And I do believe he saved me a year and a half of, a year and a half, 100 pounds, 150 pounds of weight. I believe that when he gave me permission to take myself as seriously as he had taken himself and his friends had taken themselves, that he saved me that slow, steady climb to oblivion, which part of me knew was going to happen. And I knew the effects of it because I have diabetes on three sides of my grandparents. The fourth side is high blood pressure and heart illness. I watched my grandmother, my mother's mother, my father, I'm sorry, my mother's father die of diabetes-related illnesses. My mother got it later on. Well, my mother had it at the time. She wasn't doing anything to stop it. She was compulsively eating as well. I watched my father's grandmother die of overeating and become more and more immobile, and she had a stroke, and she couldn't read, which was the only thing available to her. I mean, I knew what was in store for me, and my doctors had told me what was in store for me as I gradually gained more and more weight. So I went to my first meeting, and I had 7 years. I got a sponsor, and I worked the steps the best I knew how, but I made two major mistakes. And the first mistake, well, I'll let me tell the story in a better way. I relapsed, in and out of relapse. I adopted the diet that I had in the Weigh and Pay plan. I worked the steps hard. I felt great. I lost weight. And I then adopted the maintenance plan of the Weigh and Pay plan that I had, which allowed me a little bit of comfort food, a little bit of ice cream or a little bit of a donut or a little bit of a cookie once a week, you know. And quickly that ice cream, well, it became a cookie and a donut and ice cream. And then the ice cream became not just the carton, but the tub. And I was just going like that and saying, I got to stop, I got to stop, I got to stop. This went on and off for 7 years. And people in the rooms were so nice and accommodating. I'd go to the meetings. They'd say, how are you, Laurie? I'd say, fine. And they'd say, great, great. Just keep coming back. It's not about food. It's about love or something like that. And one day, the shyest woman in the room came up to me. And she said, how are you, Laurie? I said, fine. And she looked at me, and I'll try and do my best to replicate it because it was almost like this. I mean, really? Is what she said. And I just, you know, and I said, I'm in terrible shape. You know, that woman loved me enough to be honest with me. She said she prayed for 2 weeks before she did that. And she basically saved my life. I got kind of abstinent. I worked with her for 3 months and things began to feel better. I was asked to sponsor someone. He had been in AA for 15 years, sober in AA for 15 years. So I didn't really sponsor him and he didn't really sponsor me. We just worked together and worked the steps the way that he knew and the way that I could adapt them to my understanding of OA. It doesn't matter what I did, but what I want to say is that I missed that as I worked the steps with him, I realized that the first and major mistake I had made was wanting to believe what seems to have been true for my sponsor, but was not true for me, that it was all a matter of quantity, that I could eat anything in moderation, which is, of course, what any diet for overweight people tells you, that once you lose your weight, you can eat anything in moderation. And for my sponsor, that was true. It seemed to be true. And of course, for people who have eating disorders, they're often told by their eating disorders clinic, you must eat everything in moderation. You can't not eat anything, which may not be true for them in the same way it wasn't true for me. Maybe they have particular foods that cause them the same kind of problems that I had. I don't know. But what I began to realize was that in the doctor's opinion and in parts of the big book and in our OA 12 and 12, it says that compulsive, well, if in the AA literature it means alcoholics, but in our literature it's compulsive eaters. We get an abnormal physical reaction. Once we start, we can't stop. And this may be an eating behavior, such as once I start chewing certain things or in certain ways, I get this reaction where my mouth wants to chew. Once I start vomiting, I can't stop vomiting. If I'm a bulimic, once I start restricting, I can't start restrict stop re from restricting. Or it may be particular foods, which it is true for me, certain kinds of foods and certain kinds of ingredients mixed together that cause me problems. I don't want to get into that. Maybe the topic I'll choose will be abstinence. So we can talk about a plan of eating or something of that sort. But that was my first mistake because for the 7 years I've been working the steps, I would lose my weight on this diet. And then I take back some foods that my diet had told me I could have. And then I started to gorge on them because they were foods that I could not have. In the same way that the alcoholic can't have alcohol in any form, I could not have certain foods in any form, or even in moderation. And once I discovered that, it became a matter of exploring what it was I had to abstain from. And one thing that's clear in the group conscience of Overeaters Anonymous, it states very clearly, what I can eat, you might not be able to eat. What you can eat, I might not be able to eat. Each one of us has individual things that we must abstain from. For some of us, it may simply be specific eating behaviors. For some of us, it may be specific foods. For others of us, it may be specific ingredients or specific combinations of ingredients. For me, for instance, a combination, my biggest problem overall, when I look at all the foods I've overeaten in my life, which includes things like French fries and potato chips and buttered popcorn and ice cream and shortbread and all that, it is fat in combination with salt and fat in combination with sugar. That, for me, is my biggest overall problem. Plus, there are many other specific foods I have to abstain from. Plus, I have some eating behaviors I have to abstain from. One of them is chewing all the time. If I chew all the time, even if I'm chewing non-caloric foods, I end up eating in greater volumes. Even the foods that don't cause me to eat too much, my chewing causes me to eat too much. And that's one way of breaking my volume issue is by abstaining from the act of chewing or sucking or exercising my mouth in any major way between my meals. Once I discovered that, and then I worked the steps, and by approximately May 1st of 1993, I no longer wanted the foods that I had given up, the ingredients I had given up, and the eating behaviors I had given up. And it was an amazing experience to be able to live in that neutral zone. And then I discovered my second mistake in my years of abstinence, of my years of in and out of abstinence, my first 7 years in the fellowship. And that was, I was good at 11 and 12. I had 25 prayer books, well, meditation books. Maybe there were only 10 of them, but I had a lot of them. My wife kept buying them for me. I don't know why. I was doing service and I was sponsoring all during this time when I was having my own problems. But what I did not understand was step 10. And I get this from the big book, and I think there's sometimes a real misunderstanding. The step, as it's written, says, when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. And what was happening in those 7 years were things like this. I would yell at my children and then immediately apologize to them because that's what the step seems to say. When we were wrong, promptly admitted it. But when I look back, what was really going on in my life at that time when I was yelling at my kids was that my wife's family was dying off and I loved them and she loved them and our kids loved them. And my wife was taking care of them as they were dying. And Her sister cancer, her father cancer, her mother Alzheimer's, and she was run ragged trying to deal with all these things as they slowly deteriorated. And I was trying to support her. Well, I was supporting her and feeling guilty that I was resenting her being away, but knowing that she had to be. And who did I take that out on? My kids. And apologized to my kids in no way dealt with the real issues that were going on in my life. And so I now understand that when step 10 says continue to take personal inventory, what they were referring to, if you read the big book at any rate, was doing steps 4 and 5 and 6 and 7 and 8 and 9, the whole inventory, where we identify our defects of character and also get rid of them by making real amends. And the real amends I owed were to my in-laws, to have a better attitude towards them and to accept the facts of their illness and to support my wife and to have a different attitude towards the role I could play in helping them and love my kids even more rather than yelling at my kids. But those are the amends I really owed. But I didn't know that because I didn't identify them because I didn't do steps 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9, which is step 10. So I have been doing this now for almost 29 years. I have discovered on the way some foods that I thought I could eat that I can't eat. There's a fake ice cream that you can make with frozen blueberries and skim milk Greek yogurt. Put it in a blender, it tastes just like ice cream. Yeah, it tastes just like ice cream. And even though it's absolutely healthy with the probiotics and the antioxidants and the fiber and the lack of calories, it tasted so much like ice cream, I had to eat it. And I had to continue eating. And as soon as I recognized that, I gave it up. Same with hot air popcorn. I made really good hot air popcorn. So good that it tasted just like the popcorn I used to have. And I began to use that as one of my complex carbohydrates, my fiber, in my meals. And I would eat that to the exclusion of eating the protein and other things that I had to eat. And one of my mentors in OA said, if you find you can't stop, stop. And so I gave up even that kind of popcorn, even though it's perfectly healthy, very few calories, and good for me. So I have learned over the years, and then I'd given up nuts, and then for some medical reasons, I talked to my doctor. I decided I would experiment with some nuts. But I knew that my real problem, when I thought about it, was the fat in nuts that explode combined with the salt in the nuts. If I eliminated the salt, I could eat some nuts and would not get that same explosion. And then I could have some. So for a while, for health reasons, I eat nuts, but then I stopped doing it. But I could take them or leave them. I could have six or seven and not want them. So it all depends. I mean, it's very careful analysis, very careful, searching into our hearts. Helps to have someone do it with you at times. But that was, for me, the most important. I think I'm about 15 minutes. I could talk a little bit more. Is that right? Is it about 15 minutes I've spoken? Now I have about another 5. Is that right? I'm looking to someone to say yes, but Leslie is off camera and she's the one who asked me. I'll speak for another 5 minutes if that's okay. Is that okay? Yeah, okay. I want to talk a bit about step 12 and a bit about how important it is in OA. I have a lot of experience in OA. I've been around quite a bit. I've gone to a lot of different kinds of meetings. I think that we sometimes suffer from a misunderstanding of what step 12 is and how we should go about actualizing it. Step 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we try to carry this message to the compulsive eater who still suffers. So, what is this message? It is that we have had a spiritual awakening as the result of doing these steps. And what is a spiritual awakening? Step 2 tells us that a spiritual awakening is the sanity that we have been seeking. Why are we insane? Well, step 1 has told us that we're powerless and that the powerlessness is the insanity. Because once we start, we can't stop. Okay, we know that. That's a problem with our bodies. It is a disability that's similar to the fact that I have to wear glasses to look at the computer screen. I don't, say, well, I've been wearing glasses for 25 years, so now I can throw them away because I've been really good for 25 years. I accept the fact that I need glasses. I accept the fact that when I'm in public, I need a hearing aid in my right ear. I accept the fact that at the age of 76, I am less able to do the things that, well, probably given how much I weighed, I could probably do the same things I did when I was 40. I don't know. But I had greater resistance and resilience when I was 40 than I am now. I mean, I accept the reality of my body in so many ways. But the real problem of the alcoholic and of the addict, of any addict, not just the alcoholic, the big book makes it clear with the alcoholic, is that my mind will not accept it when it comes to my addiction. And that I give myself any reason under the sun for going back to that which I know I should accept as real in me. The fact that I cannot eat ice cream is a reality for me now. But it wasn't for many, many years in this fellowship because I thought I could eat anything in moderation. And more than that, every diet told me that I could. And so the insanity is that the mind keeps finding reasons to return. And those reasons can be deep, dark, internally emotional reasons, the horrible ways that we have been treated in our lives, or the things that we have done, and that maybe the guilt we feel, or the shame that we have felt, or the sadness that we feel. It can be those horrible, horrible, or the situations we find ourselves in. It is often some very deep emotional reason, but it can also be as silly as I've never had this before. I've exercised for 20 minutes, so it's got to be good for that. Or I won't be able to have this again. I'm in a particular place. They're made it for me. They're all looking at me. I want to be part of the group. If they can have it, why can't I have it? And so these reasons are the ones that the mind picks up that make sense at the time, but don't make sense in reality. That old AA question, so how'd that work out for you? Is a great question. So that's the insanity, is that my mind, I cannot control my mind to be watch vigilant. Oh no, I can't have that. That's bad for me. And when we talk about step 12, when we talk about carrying the message, what we must do in OA is speak to those who come in the rooms. And the people who come in the rooms are the ones who want that freedom. They're the ones for whom it resonates. I don't want to eat this anymore. It doesn't attract me. I'm in a position of neutrality. Not that I found God, because if I want to find God and I didn't have an eating problem, I wouldn't go to OA to find God. It's that I have found a solution to my addiction. If you have my addiction, then join the millions of people who have found that the 12 steps have a solution for the addiction that you have. You abstain, you work the steps. By the time you finish step 9, you won't want to go back to it. And steps 10, 11, and 12 keep you in that state of grace. Thank you.